Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another special edition of the 40 Scenes Fire American Soccer Show. The United States in their final group stage match, they do avoid playing Costa Rica in the quarterfinals. They do avoid them, and they have also, with the 3-goal differential added on in favor of the United States, the USA defeats Nicaragua by a final of 3-0. Should have been 4-0 or 5-0, but you know what? Give the keeper of Costa Rica credit. Give credit to this player, this goalkeeper from Nicaragua in Llorente, Justo Llorente. 2 solid penalty saves, not just on Dom Dwyer, but also on Joe Corona, joining me right now for this big post-match show is, of course, Miss Silvana Budenschein of MLSfemale.com. Very soon, we're going to have Chris Gluck on from the Yellow Card Podcast. Silvana, I have to tell you, I think when it's all said and done out of the 3 group stage matches, regardless of who's going to be replacing certain players on this roster, I think this was the most, the best match out of the 3 that this roster has shown in the group stage.
Absolutely. This is more what I was looking for going into the Gold Cup. I think as a fan, you're looking at it and saying, I want more speed, I want more openness, and that is what they delivered tonight. You could see they were all over the field. They were passing and they were running, and they really had the ball. It wasn't like a scramble. It looked like a little bit of a scramble at the end. I'll give them that. But, you know, you get a little frantic. But for the most part, they were open and they were speedy and they did what they had to do.
Yep, they really did. And I got to tell you, that was probably the most completed or the most exciting 90 minutes I think we've seen from this USA side ever since this Gold Cup got underway. Chris Gluck of the Old Card Podcast joins me right now. Chris, no Guzan in net, so that's obviously a positive. But you gotta say, you gotta say though, and I agreed with you when you tweeted that Bill Hamid. Absolutely, Bill Hamid, better communication out there. And, you know, he's had his moments in friendlies. I don't think he's looked good in friendlies. You wanted to see him in a competitive match in goal for the USA. And I will say this right now. I think he acquitted himself very well. And I wouldn't be shocked if he replaces Guzan, I'll say as a backup. For now, I think Tim Howard still has the number one spot. But definitely Bill Hamid has the backup position, maybe taking it away from Brad Guzan.
Yeah, you know, I'll agree with that. You know, they're just in kind of defense of Guzan Hamid had a different center back pairing tonight, and I think Beisler and Miazga offer more speed than Hedges and Gonzalez. So there is that. But all in all, I think Hamid showed better. Yes. And if I was on the pitch, the first thing I'd be listening for is communication between Hamid and his 2 center backs.
Yep. Yeah. Definitely, because that's the one thing that I believe that is needed desperately when you need a keeper to go out there and to not just encourage his center backs, but at least, you know, to make sure that they're aware of who is going to be inside the box and to find a way to, you know, to just keep on defending and be in great position to defend. That's for sure. But, Silvana, we have to go local here. And when I mean local, I'm talking about in the state of New Jersey. Matt Miazga with that goal. Obviously, that was a huge goal for the United States. They needed that goal to at least avoid that quarterfinal matchup against Costa Rica. But forget that. The positioning he had in this match, not just defending, but on that goal, we knew what he was able to do. We knew what he could do. Even though I still felt he left the Red Bulls a little too early, in my opinion, regardless of that, that kid is the future center back of this national team, and that kid showed why he had that breakout year with the New York Red Bulls before he even transferred out to go to Chelsea.
The pride of Clifton, New Jersey, I tell you. He's great. And that was my first real soccer biz moment. When I saw him sold off to to Chelsea, I'm like, no, you don't take the kid and send him to overseas, you know, because he's a kid, you know. And we're all like, we must send him care packages with bagels and pizza. But he knows what he's doing, and we have to let him go, and we have to let him develop. And Chelsea, you know, love him or hate him, that's what they do. They loan them out. They develop, you know, they give them a chance elsewhere just to get them developed. I don't know if he's ever going to play for Chelsea proper. He might not. But whatever he's done has worked. Now, I don't have, you know, 5,000 soccer cable channels so that I can watch Eredivisie. But, you know, it seems to be working, whatever he's doing. And I was really happy to see him out there. I was happy to see him score. I think, if I remember correctly, that's kind of how he scored against NYCFC during the Red Wedding, as they call it, the 7-0 defeat. So
That was the 3-1 game, the first time at Yankee Stadium in 2015. So yeah, he was already gone after 2015 season.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
But I knew he was able to do it, and it did look familiar. And I'm just really glad that he was able to show himself tonight and, you know, try to make a name for himself, try to make a spot for himself. He's what I think most teams should be looking for in a center back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's got the speed, he's got the height, he's got the vision. He knows what he's looking at.
Yep, he really does. What also, Chris, what else surprises you or makes you smile when you see a guy like or a kid like Matt Miazga going out there in a full 90-minute match? What makes you happy about seeing this kid getting an opportunity to be in this Gold Cup and also for the national team?
Well, you know, when I first saw him play, I thought he was going to be a worthy center back. So for me, when I see him, it helps give me my own good feedback on what I see and then how that translates to future playing time. Villafania is a good example of that as well. When I saw him play 4 or 5 years ago, I think it was when he first when I first saw him play with Chivas, I thought his positional play was superb. He doesn't overcommit as much. He knows his speed. I'd offer Miazga's the same. I mean, from the first play, his first pass, it was a multi-layered pass that went 40 yards, and it didn't get more than 2 yards off the ground. And it was all the way up top. And I thought, okay, so that's brilliant. Not up top as in the 18-yard box, but it was out wide right, I think. That showed to me that, one, he's got good positional sense. 2, good vision, and 3, a great pass, first touch, you know, pass touch. And he played the game didn't play him. You know, if I look back on Acosta, you know, it's just my intuition that the game played him. He didn't play the game. And I'd offer the first time we saw McCarty, the game played him. He didn't play the game. Whereas tonight,
agreed,
McCarty played the game, and mm-hmm. and he didn't have the game control his play. And to me, you know, there's not a statistic for that. That's just, you know, an intuition that you have as a coach or somebody that's grown up in the game, that when you see a player, does the game control them or do they control the game when they're in or around the vicinity of the ball? I thought at the end of the day, Beisler was a good learning match player for him. And I thought it was interesting that Gonzalez was the learning match player for Hedges. So Arena wisely put 2 younger lads, one on the right, one on the left, and paired them with probably mentally the 2 best center backs that you could have paired them with Brooks not being available. So, you know, that's something that I'll probably put in my article here and after the Gold Cup's over. But I do think that Hedges and Miazga are the pair for the future. Whether or not they're actually going to be the pair that ends up making the, you know, their match debut in the next World Cup qualifier, I don't think Arena does that. But certainly Miazga shows well.
Yeah, I thought he really showed well in this one, and he really proved his worth. You want to know who else I think also proved his worth a lot better in this match? Silvana, Kellen Rowe, just to be in great position for the goal, and not just being in position for that goal. I thought he attacked the near side very well. I thought he attacked down the left side brilliantly today. He looked a lot better, and at the same time, mm-hmm. I truly believe that this kid might have stolen a spot for these next 4 World Cup qualifiers in September, October. I could be wrong, but I feel like he stole a spot.
I thought he did a pretty impressive job right out of the gate. I think he had the first shot of the game at the 8th minute, and he was knocking on the door for the first 20. He kind of pulled back after a while. You know, he allowed for Dwyer to do his thing, try and be that striker and get in there. But he knew that he could run that ball, that he could outsmart the Nicaraguan defense. That's what allowed him to finally get in there and finally find the back of the net in the 56.
Yeah, definitely. We can talk about those that stole spots, definitely, Chris. Mm-hmm. But, Chris, I got to say that, you know, with Kellen Rowe, I felt he stole a spot, true. I want to go back to Dax McCarty. And I agree with you, Chris. This time Dax played the game. The first time the game played him. Do you think maybe he stole a spot as well? I think I need to see Dax more when they play in this quarterfinal matchup. We'll wait to see who their opponents are going to be, Chris. But still, though, I feel like Dax needs another match under his belt to do a little bit better than what he did against Panama. Because I still feel like do you feel like that while he played the game this time, he still seemed a little timid here and there? He got the ball dispossessed pretty easily too much again. That's my little drawback, Chris.
Yeah, you know, of the 3, Acosta, McCarty, or Roldan, I'd offer McCarty was the better of the 3. That's not to say that Acosta might not get additional minutes ahead of Dax, but I think probably what gets in Dax's way of success is limited playing time at this level. So, you know, I can see him looking at video analysis, doing video analysis extensively on this game, because he's being exposed to different styles of penetration that you don't normally see in Major League Soccer. But if you'll notice, Bedoya pushed higher up the pitch, which to me says that Arena recognized that McCarty was doing well enough on his own to play the holding, stopping type of central midfield role. In going out wide left, okay, so here's kind of my take with respect to Rowe, and maybe you're alluding to Nagby or Johnson, I'm not sure, but I don't see Rowe as being the same player as Nagby. I mean, there's no question he likes to push in the attack. And he certainly isn't afraid of taking a strike on goal. I think, you know, they're like chalk and cheese when you compare Nagby and Rowe to that. It's like, give me Rowe's attacking personality with Nagby, or give me Nagby's possession and defensive personality with Rowe. And to me, the easier to translate is, you know, push Nagby to attack a little bit more as opposed to putting Rowe on the pitch over Nagby. And maybe it's just me being blind, but I'm seeing Nagby over Johnson. But, I mean, I'll give you a good example. I think sometime early in the second half, Rowe just took the ball forward. And within, you know, less than 10 or 15 seconds, it's a good attacking penetration type of thing, but the U.S. men's national team lost possession of the ball. Whereas in that instance, on the left wing, just about 5 to 10 yards atop the central midfield line, Nagby doesn't do that. Nagby would have recycled the ball back to Villafania, and then they would have gone about a possession cycle to look and be a little bit more patient in penetrating forward. And then in defense, and I'm not trying to pick holes in Rowe, he's just a different player. In defense, Rowe right. would allow the opponent to penetrate towards the center of the pitch almost throughout the entire game. Okay? And if you're going to play on mm-hmm. the wing, you don't want that. You want to push the opponent to the sideline, and you want to push right. the pass down the sideline. You don't want to allow, right. by position, the opponent to be able to push the ball towards the center. And Rowe enabled that more often than not. And again, maybe it's because he's not exposed to having to have that type of role when he plays with New England. And maybe he sees that, or Arenas, I don't know. And he tries to adjust from there. But I'd say Rowe is the attacking personality that you want with Nagby.
Well, that's what I was going to actually suggest. I was thinking, you know, why not have Rowe and Nagby on the pitch at the same time, either starting or maybe one starts, the other one comes off the bench. Not saying a like for like, but at least you would say, Silvana, that – you would love to see both Nagby and Rowe together on the field, maybe Nagby a little more centrally, and have Rowe going down the near side wing.
Yeah, I could see that. I think because Rowe did such a good job up the side, it would make sense for Nagby to come in there. I'm not sure how it works out as far as whether or not they start together or they sub. These combinations are something I'm still trying to see what Arena is trying to do in order to get the result. You know, why did he put Jordan Morris in later and then Agudelo? So I'm still kind of watching how Bruce Arena works and how he puts all of this together. So that's why I like what you're saying, but I'm not sure how it comes down and who starts when.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, that's always going to be the big question, isn't it? Like, what type of formation mm-hmm. you're going to have here? You know, are you going to? I mean, like I've always told everyone, every time I've told this to Chris as well, Carter Krishnari when he's on with us. You know, the bread and butter for the United States has always been a 4-4-2. So seeing them, seeing Bruce Arena at least tinkering with the formation and at least informing his players why he's doing it before they even start to implement it, you know, that's a great thing to see. And I truly believe that, you know, when you have a great communicator in Bruce Arena, and let's be honest, Jurgen Klinsmann really wasn't that great of a communicator to his players. He always springs something on them before he even play the freaking match. But still, though, you just have to say, and I truly believe this, is that when you give your players enough time to understand what you're trying to do, you can definitely execute it. And, Chris, you know, I think, and, you know, Joe Corona – he's always going to be a fringe player. I feel like he's always going to be a fringe player. Now, I'm happy he scored his goal. I'm happy he scored. But I just don't see enough that Joe Corona is going to, you know, I don't know, maybe not go to the knockout stage. I certainly don't believe he's going to be in the World Cup qualifiers for September and October. But, I just don't think he's done enough. And I hate to say this. The penalty that he missed, it took him out.
Mm. Yeah, you know, I mean, I want to just kind of cycle back to Kellen Rowe for a second. I actually think he's better.
Time's up.
In as an attacking central midfielder, as opposed to a player out on the wings, and the reason why I say that is because he's got a good first touch. He's got good vision,
yeah,
and he likes to strike the ball. And he will cycle back when the team doesn't have the ball, but he's not quite the possession-based player that I think is probably better out on the left if you don't play Zardes for crosses.
Right.
The reason why I mentioned Rowe is because I think he's a backup to Pulisic, not Corona. Okay, so for the better part of the game, throughout the entire game, I really didn't think Corona added what I'd call an attacking central midfield visionary role at all. You know, there wasn't through passes, and to be honest with you, against probably any team ranked higher than Nicaragua, you're not going to get four touches like he did in order to strike a ball that actually was deflected into goal, like he did in the 18-yard box. Okay, so there were four touches, which is good, but you're not going to get that time. And so, okay, he got the goal, which is good. It's part of the result that Arena needs. But it certainly is not the nous, the first touch that Rowe had. And then the audacity and the vision to strike it with the outside part of his right boot to the near post. It goes against everything that the goalkeeper is going to expect, because he's going to expect him to throw his hips wide and push the ball to the far post. And he didn't. He struck it to the near post, so it minimizes the reaction time. To me, that says that Rowe is a good striker of the ball. He also showed technical skill in that volley earlier in the first half, too. I didn't see that with Corona at all in any of the minutes that he played.
Exactly.
So,
and that's where
I think
he's going to fall short there, Chris, excuse me. That's where I think he's going to fall short. I mean, look, like I said before, and I mean, this is like, you know, the situation with Kellen Rowe against Panama. He makes a great pass to Dom Dwyer, who made it 1-0, but he makes a poor play that leads to Panama. You know, it's a poor play that leads to Panama getting that goal, because if he doesn't go down to try to slide tackle away the ball, Panama does not get that opportunity. So all you can say is that how you call it? That's the only reason why I think Corona has you know, found a way to you know, get himself off this team. And I'm not saying I'm not trying to say, guys, that I'm rooting for this to happen. Look, I want to see kids get an opportunity. I want to see kids get a chance to do something wonderful for the U.S. men's national team. But if it's not able to do so, you know, then it's not able to do so. Mm-hmm. So that's all you can just do. I mean, that's all you can say. There's nothing you can do about it. And we already saw this on the broadcast. Michael Bradley's already in Cleveland. Tim Howard is already in Cleveland. Nagbe is on his way. Altidore is on his way. Clint Dempsey is on his way. I mean, for sure, we are going to see, you know, people being removed and heading home back to their club sides or back to, you know, going back to, you know, on to their off seasons, and you're seeing those players coming in. And they're getting ready for the quarterfinals. Once we find out who they're going to play against after tomorrow, you know, we'll probably discuss it or not. But still, though, I mean, this is the situation that's in front of us, guys. And you know, Silvana, I got to say, you know, it's good to see Michael Bradley, even though Chris still wants him gone. But anyway. Just like you want Bedoya gone, but let's be honest, Bedoya did a good job. I know. But we have to discuss it.
I don't want him gone, Daniel. I just don't see him as a starter.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's all.
Then you know what? That's even better. I'll take that. Let him come off the bench and do damage like Michael Bradley can do. But Silvana, look, Bedoya did a pretty good job today, and you know, I think he's going to be in Bruce's plans for September and October.
Yeah, I'm seeing that too. And honestly, you know, I was impressed with him today. He really was out there. You get this idea that when someone gets that captain's armband, that they're going to get an inflated head, that they're going to really go out there and want to be the star of the show. And they even mentioned that the sideline reporter, Jenny Taft, mentioned that after talking to Bedoya, he's going to be the utility player. He's going to be what Bruce needs when they need it, when the team needs it. And if that means that's the assist, that he's going out wide, that he's, you know, getting down and dirty with a 1v1 situation just to get the ball out to somebody else, then that's what he does. And that's the kind of thing I like to see in a captain in general, but Bedoya specifically. I think any of those personal things that he's had where he's gotten into beefs online with people, that stuff might be a thing of the past, and that's going to go a long way. And I think, and it's weird because, you know, that has nothing to do with what he does on the field, how he is off the field, how he talks to other people, but it kind of is. And you know, I guess the soccer mom in me says, at least you're behaving yourself, you know, off the field. So then when you're on the field, people will listen to you. And that's what Bedoya really showed in the past couple of games. All right. Despite myself, I'm okay with what Bedoya is doing.
Listen, look, we have to discuss those types of players where, you know, look, we all have an opinion about some players. Do we feel they should deserve to be on the national team, or they don't deserve it? That, we have to talk about it, because if we don't, then it's always going to be a, you know, sunshine and rainbows type of show, and nobody wants that. We got to put our opinions out there to let people know this is how we feel and this is what, how we think, and, you know. But at the end of the day, it is the head coach of the U.S. men's national team. This time it's Bruce Arena that goes out there. This is a special edition of the 4 Scenes Fire American Soccer Show as we're doing post-game action here. United States defeating Nicaragua by a final of 3-0 by Joe Corona, by Kellen Rowe, and Matt Miazga. Once again, Silvana Bunshine from MLSfemale.com, Chris Gluck, Yellow Card Podcast. Chris, we're going to start off with you on this one, but let me just give this out. Bruce Arena, since taking over for Jurgen Klinsmann, 11 matches unbeaten. 11 matches unbeaten. At least, you would say, 4 to 5 I'd say maybe like 5 to 6 wins, 5 draws. He has not lost a game since returning to the national team. And it's kind of funny, Chris, how there's that Twitter web, that Twitter site called Arena Out, and they stopped at 2 wins, 0 losses, and 2 draws because apparently they gave up. Because Bruce Arena right now, and I know people are still complaining about Bruce Arena because they're trying to defend Jurgen Klinsmann, where I'm sorry to say this to all the Jurgen Klinsmann supporters, it is undefensible that you assumed that Bruce Arena was going to take the program backwards. The truth of the matter is this, Chris. He has worked with a bunch of players, and let's be honest with ourselves here. Some of them have shown well, some have not. And Bruce is a better judge of talent, I would like to think. Now, let's not, you know, I'm not going to completely crap all over on Klinsmann because he did discover Jordan Morris. And we have to give Jordan Morris credit. He has done well in certain games when he gets called into the U.S. men's national team. He has been active, he's been playing very strong. But still, though, Bruce Arena, he knows who plays in MLS. He knows who's playing overseas. He also knows how to assemble a roster and get a true game plan going so that he can assess what to do, how to do it, and get the results that they desperately need.
Well, I'm not going to bite too hard on this one.
but
you know, at the end of the day, okay, Arena's getting the results, which is good. I'm trying to assess the U.S. men's national team as a program as a whole, and and I'm still disappointed in the scouting / selection / recruiting of U.S. soccer as a whole. And I'll give you a good example. Areola. Okay. I don't think he's added anything but speed. He's added nothing that I've seen in way of nous, vision, passing, first touch. He offers speed. And then you look at a guy like Chris Pontius. He played a full 90 minutes today, and I don't recall hearing the TV crew overhype him in a big way at all. And to me, that's a shame. That's a damn shame. Because he did everything that you want a player to do that was on the pitch in his position to do. And his lack of speed didn't get in the way. As a matter of fact, he had height. He had first touch. He had vision. He had positional awareness. And yet you see a guy like Areola who has no first touch, who has no technical skills that he's shown. He might have them in club play, but he's not shown any of that at the international level. And it's like, how does he get selected? I got to say the same thing about Corona. How does he get selected? over a guy like Pontius. I don't know. And that's not selected to play. That's selected to be in the 18 or the 24. We got guys that have mental acuity on the pitch, that have great first touch on the pitch, that don't get riled, that aren't getting selected for the squad. Okay, all of those things you can say that Graham Zusi has, apart from the fact that he's playing a new position that's not new anymore, and his positional awareness just isn't good. It's like, how many other right fullbacks are out there that we're not seeing?
Yep. No, I agree with you. I mean, look, I agree with you. I mean, who are the ones scouting the players in that play here in MLS? That is probably the biggest question that every men's national team coach is probably having right now.
To me, it goes deeper than that. It's what sort of selection process, what scouting process is going on at the U23 and the U20?
Well, I would
because
have to say
that. Because that's supposed to feed the U.S. men's national team.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I don't know what I don't know, Daniel.
No, I know what you're saying exactly. And, Silvana probably could maybe answer this as well. You never know. I mean, I agree with you. I agree that, who right now in the under-20s is going to make that push to the senior national team? I mean, Sargent is definitely one of those. I would say Brooks Lennon is also another one of those. De La Torre, definitely. And we can definitely say, Silvana and I can definitely say Tyler Adams. He's ready to make that push. Yeah, we can definitely say Tyler Adams because he's done a remarkable job, not just with the under-20s, but for the Red Bulls as well, because he has found ways to calm down the midfield whenever they're on defense. He's attacking. He's got bite. Fine. He served a game suspension for the frustration kick on Yangel Herrera from NYCFC on that Saturday afternooner. Yeah. But still, though, Silvana, I mean, those are the kids that are probably for the future. And, the question is who else is ready in MLS to make this move to the senior side for the national team?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen what Brooks Lennon can do, and I've seen what Tyler Adams can do, and they're ready to create. They're ready to go out there and see the game for what it is. And I definitely agree with Chris on some of these selections. Like, why are you choosing these people? I know. Watching the game, I watch with my kids very often, and we all kind of say the same thing when we're watching. If there's a mistake or something gets given, it's intercepted and things like that, we're like, you had one job. When you're out there, you have one job, and if you don't do it, you shouldn't be out there. And I feel like that, because tonight, that's exactly what the whole team had. They had one job: get 3 goals, play in the group, and get it done. And, when they missed both, not one, but both of the penalty kicks, you're like, wait a second, this should be easier for you. So it is. It can be really frustrating. And I can read lips. I saw what Arena said after the second PA didn't go through. And I said
this
the same thing to a certain
show,
extent.
Silvana. This is a clean show.
Well, I didn't say what it was. But yeah.
That's a good point,
totally
Silvana.
Yeah, I totally understand. And you want to say, and I know it's what the coach wants at a particular time. What is he looking for? He wants to try out new players. He wants to do something out there. But why are we picking these people? And it is. It's frustrating. So I totally agree. I think we need to start looking lower. We have to look U23s, U21s, go on to the, we have to look ahead to Russia. We can't stay with Graham Zusi. We can't stay with all some of these guys. You know, we have to move on.
Yeah, and I'm going to repile on, so you can penalize me 10 yards. But, you know, the other thing that
wrong sport
struck me is just not – maybe it's just me, but Corona stepping up to take that penalty, I personally view was a bad decision as a team player.
It really was. Yes.
You have a great striker where a goalkeeper probably took notes. I mean, the team probably took notes. What side does Dwyer favor? And so that's the direction the keeper went. And it's just as simple as that. But I think as a team player, you need to let Dwyer take that second PK. Because when you fall off the horse, the best thing in the world for a person psychologically is to get right back on. And the fact that Corona stepped up and took that PK spoke miles to me, volumes, that he doesn't belong. And there's going to be people that are going to disagree, I'm sure. But to me, that's the mentality part of the game, that it's a team game. And you got a guy like Dwyer who 95 out of 100 times he's going to make that PK. That, you know, it's just me. Maybe.
No, I agree. I absolutely agree. I absolutely agree. I mean, you know, Joe Corona, I think let's just say this right now. If Corona would have converted the penalty, maybe we say something different about him. Maybe we say something.
I don't.
Look, that was brave of him to take the penalty. I know you wouldn't. That's okay. It's a fair, clean show. We all know. Look, everything's up for grabs. You know that.
Yeah.
But still, though, I think we have to give at least, you know, give Corona, you know, some credit to be brave on taking that penalty. But still, though. The truth of the matter is this, is that he missed it. Dom missed it, sadly. Both were taken poorly. And, you know, with Corona, I think he'll suffer more for missing the penalty than Dom has, because Dom has already proven himself. And, you know, Dom has already, like I've already said, he's already proven himself, Dom Dwyer. He's going to be in the friendly, in the qualifiers in September and October. Corona might. I think Joe Corona. And once again, I like the kid. I think he's a talented player. I think he can do some good things, but I just don't see him at the level of where, you know, he needs to be out there, you know, every single match. That you have to rely on him, Silvana. And once again, I just don't think he's done enough. And now the missed penalty, I think, will be added on to that, where he's going to be heading back to his club side in Mexico. I just don't see Corona making that push to the knockout stage.
Yeah, you know, I was kind of paying attention to the whole game, and Chris even touched on this. It was too many touches for his goal. It actually got deflected a little bit, which is what pushed it away from Llorente enough for it to make it inside the goal. You know, if that defender hadn't been there, it probably would have gone straight to him. So I know, like I said before, I'm watching with my kids. And I don't know how my son does this. He's 13 years old, and he watches and he plays a lot of soccer. And he says to himself, I've never heard anyone say, that's a lucky goal, and make it sound like such an insult, as my son does. You know, he's looking at you like, oh, my God, what a lucky goal. And I'm like, yeah, okay, I know what you mean. Like, wow, you know, other people would have done it, and it would have been skill. What he did was luck, and that can run out. You know, that I think that's what's bothersome about it. We need, and that luck ran out very quickly because he tried to ride that goal to the penalty shot. He's like, you can't do that. You can't, that was a huge thing two seasons ago, I think, with Columbus Crew. That was why Kai Kamara left. It kind of came to a head in that moment of who takes the shot. Who's going for, who's grabbing the ball and saying, don't worry, guys, I got this, and then not getting it. Who still gets it when they do that, and who doesn't? You're right. It counts against him more than it should, I guess, or more than it would. It was less of a plus had he made it, and more of a minus that he did not.
Yep, and that's where I think the minus is going to be larger than the plus right there. As we continue on here, guys, it's very interesting to see. And I'll go back to Bill Hamid once again, Chris. Not so much that his communications, his communicating with his defenders were very good. This is a guy who was tabbed to be the future national team keeper, and you've seen MLS a lot. Silvana has seen MLS a lot. I've seen it a lot. Bill Hamid is having a horrible year with DC United. And Hamid has been, squirmy when, he has to make a big save and he can't do it. Especially for DC United. Especially when you have, all these great players in the league. And his defenders are just finding ways to create holes to allow these attackers to score goals. I mean, we remember when DC United came to Red Bull Arena, and who powered that shot in off a great feat from Felipe Silvana? Bradley Wright Phillips. And he five-holed him, Chris. And while Hamid is getting an opportunity now, which, finally he is, but this is why Jesse Gonzalez made this switch, playing nationally for Mexico and now the United States. This kid is the future now for the national team once Tim Howard and Brad Guzan are done with the national team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what I've heard. I think the one thing going for him is that he's under the head coaching of Oscar Pareja, who I think should be the next, barring somebody from overseas, should be the next U.S. men's national team coach after the World Cup. But, being a goalkeeper is kind of a funny thing. A lot of saves or not saves have a significant amount to do with the back four that's in front of you or even the back six. And I'm a bit hesitant to draw a conclusion that a keeper is good or bad based upon the results that their domestic team have. Without taking into account what's the real weighted value of the team, in front of the goalkeeper. At the end of the day, I think Hamid, statistically, let's just have a real quick look here. Stats. Nicaragua put two shots on target. One shot was blocked and three were off target. Hamid made the saves that he needed to make. And that's all you can ask for. I didn't see a goal go in where if the keeper would have been stretched out maybe 2 or 3 inches more, one way or another, like I think we saw with Guzan in one instance in the previous two games, or actually in two instances, one in both games. And, you know, some are going to argue that that was positional play was incorrect for Guzan. Maybe it was. But, you know, Hamid got a clean sheet, and he did it recognizing that Zusi is a weakness. I think he's the biggest weakness in the back four. And he did it with Miazga and Beisler as a new center-back pair. And then you have solid Jorge Villafana, who, again, continues to get unrecognized, I think, for what he adds. All good for Hamid. And if he's the leader of that back four, back five, back six, great. That's brilliant. Because Howard's not going to be around, probably, for very much longer. Mm-hmm. I was just going to say, as far as Gonzalez goes, okay, he's doing well for FC Dallas, and it's a team that plays counterattacking. Mm-hmm. So he is seeing the opponent with the ball in his defending final third a lot, which is good, because that's kind of a mirror image of what I would expect the U.S. men's national team is going to see if they make it past World Cup qualifiers and get to the World Cup. And
yeah,
he's younger.
And, well, of course. I mean, look, don't get me wrong. I mean, it's nice seeing Tim Howard out there, but, you know, how much longer can he do it? And if this is his last World Cup, then, you know, they can make the transition, and I don't care who it is, as long as it's not Brad Guzan, because I don't think Brad Guzan, you know, can do it anymore either. I think it's time to get in fresh blood. Not saying that we can't have a veteran in the international game, not go on for this national team, but still, though, I just think that it's time to move forward. And like I've said before in the past, Silvana, currently, we've lost the ability to have a strong, solid keeper, you know, on this national team. You know, we've always had plethora of solid keepers. But, you know, while it's crazy how some have not been picked, that probably should be. If Jesse Gonzalez is the future for the national team now, you know, when Tim Howard says goodbye, then for goodness sakes, let's go. You know, let's go ahead and let's bring him on.
Yeah, and I know I was very much a fan of Brad Guzan in the past. But you have a very finite amount of time where you can be the guy. And, you know, Tim Howard was able to take a step back and go on sabbatical, and Guzan stepped up at that time, but it gave the opportunity for Howard to come back just as strong, if not stronger, and get that one extra cycle out of himself, and get back into the Gold Cup, get back towards Russia. That's his time. I think Guzan and Howard, to a certain extent, peaked together. You know, they both did the job at the time, but now they both need to step back when the time is right. I think, you know, this next cycle, if Tim Howard can make it, it blows my mind, because he and I are the same age. Like, I can't wrap my brain around the idea of even being out on a field right now. You know, I'm content to watch. But, But if he can continue, if he can still do this for the Rapids, if he can do this for the national team, more power to him. I think he's still got it. But both of them, both Howard and Guzan, are headed out. And that's okay. You know, Guzan's done his job too. It's not, you know, you're not sitting here and saying, well, oh, he never had a real chance. Well, no, he had some of a chance. You know, and sometimes that's all you get. You know, there's so many other goalkeepers out there who never even got that. You know, they showed up for a camp or two. They never even were called. You know, not everybody can have everything, and that's how it goes. So yeah, I would definitely start looking younger. Start looking to Johnson, Hamid, Gonzalez. That's our future. All right, we can't stagnate. If you're talking about this, our game as a country going forward, then the players have to go forward too. You can't look at the same players who are in their mid to late 30s. You have to look at the 21-year-old. You have to look at the 24-year-old and say, you're good too. You get a chance.
Yeah, you know, that's correct there, and that's exactly right. Go ahead, Chris.
Well, I just had one final thought, just to kind of give you an example. Okay, DCU, Hamid, his save percentage or the team save percentage for United this year is 85%, with an average of just under 21 shots faced per game. Versus Gonzalez's save percentage is just a tad under 63% with an average opponent shots taken at 11.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're looking at volume, which is what you're going to get when you play for the U.S. men's national team, you're going to get an opponent when you go to the World Cup who's going to offer a lot of shots, I think, more so than what the Americans will offer. Bill Hamid has far more pedigree in facing multiple shots on goal versus Gonzalez.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, Hamid has the best save percentage in all of MLS this year.
Yeah.
By a margin of over 7%. Over Raimondo, and he's faced the most shots per game of any goalkeeper this year. So if you're looking for a guy who's in form and faces a lot of shots, which it's likely he's going to when you play the likes of Mexico or Costa Rica, if Costa Rica's not going to play counterattacking, Hamid is certainly a better choice, I think, than Gonzalez,
yeah.
but that's just me.
No, that's fine. I mean, look, you know, once again, we don't have to worry about these things because we're not the ones going on the field. But
exactly.
Excuse me. But obviously, you know, these are decisions they have to make, and these are decisions that Bruce Arena needs to make, you know, down the road. Well, absolutely, till the end of 2018, because once again, he's not staying past 2018. He's just fixing what was broken and trying to qualify for Russia for next summer. And then afterwards, you know, whether it be Oscar Pereja or I wouldn't mind giving Tab Ramos a shot at the senior national team level. But that's just me. Guys, that's just me. I'm not saying what's right or what's wrong. I just feel like he's been successful with the under-20s to going to two straight tournaments to reaching the quarterfinals. And, you know, he's mentored some great kids that are getting a big opportunity now for the national team whenever he's able to do so. But we are about to end this hour on the post-match show. And as always, gentlemen, lady, thank you very much for your time. I've always appreciated it. And hopefully we'll get back together for another show. Might not be directly a post-game show, but we'll definitely get something back on later on this week once we find out permanently who the quarterfinal opponent will be for the United States. But thank you both so much, and I will talk to you again soon. Have a good night.
Thank you. You too, Daniel. Take care, Savannah.
All right, take care.
All right, and that was Chris Gluck from the Yellow Card Podcast and Miss Silvana Budenschein from MLSFemale.com. I'm your host, Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you for listening to tonight's post-match shows. United States defeat Nicaragua by a final of 3-0, and all 3 goals helped the United States win Group B, so they won't have to face Costa Rica in the quarterfinals. My name is Daniel Feuerstein, and as always, please enjoy your football. Talk to you on Monday night as we review the 2017 U.S. Open Cup quarterfinals. A lot of fun there. Have a good night. Take care. So long. Bye-bye for now.